Oh, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. We are on issue 70, milestone issue 70.
I think we should make every issue a milestone.
Every issue is a milestone. We've made it through another
one. It just makes them all more exciting for doing that.
We here at Hey Kids Comics take great pride in what we do. We do our best every episode to create something we can be proud of. And this one will be no exception because you find us on issue 4 of our current story arc, Seven Deadlies. This is the issue on Pride, in case you hadn't guessed by my
I think we should just take Pride amiss for this one.
What's that?
We should just take Pride amiss for this one. Just don't even care.
Yeah. She's right. I mean, this is a hard one for me. This one's a hard of all of the sins. This is the hardest. The hardest sin for me to accept because I don't I pride is a very difficult thing for me to inject into anything I'm doing. You know, I'm very much one of those people that likes to stay in the background and not step forward and say, look at what I've wrought. I have reaped what I've sown. It's a difficult thing for me.
Well, it's very much, and you know, how to what level pride is effectively a sin. I mean, you know, is it obviously in the eyes of whoever defined the seven deadlies originally it is, but you know, how much of a sin is it to be proud, and how proud do you have to become a sin? Or right. Is there any distinction whatsoever?
Right. It's one of those. Okay, so this is a sin. We've talked about some pretty serious sins, and the thing is, pride is one of those sins that you can identify in almost any. It's the universal microcosm sin of all of them. I think you can find pride in virtually anybody you look at. More so than, let's say, gluttony or sloth or envy or rage. I think that you can pinpoint a pride in any in the way any comic book character is written, and that makes this an extremely easy topic to tackle, yet an extremely difficult topic to tackle because the question that you just asked is very, very prevalent. When is pride too far? When does pride become a sin? It's definitely walking a razor's edge to figure that out.
Is it genuinely sinful to, you know, you go out there and you spend all day putting up the barbed wire fence and you look down the line and you can't help but feel a welling of pride in what you've achieved, and all of a sudden, oh, you're a sinner.
That makes you a sinner. Is it a sin for Captain America to take pride in his country or in his duty? You know, is it a sin for Tony Stark to look at his armor and say, this is what I've wrought? You know, I've wrought out of iron. Wrought iron.
Wrought iron.
Putty!
I think that's the steampunk version is Wrought Iron Man.
Wrought Iron Man. It's a whole different – there's a lot of steam. No, not as much punk. There's definitely a lot of steam and leather gloves.
A lot of steam and not much punk, indeed.
That's the name of my next album. A lot of hot air and not a lot of bucking the system. So when is pride too much pride? Let's ask that question. Can we identify that? Can we drill down to that?
Well, it comes down to, I think, one of the defining points, or a defining point, can be a Shakespearean line from that Shakespeare play that suddenly escaped me from Henry V, where the
I was going to be like, ooh, you fancy.
Yeah.
Ooh, you fancy. You did some research.
And he's like, whatever. I can remember what I'm talking about.
Don't forget who you're talking to here, which is me. You could have said any Shakespeare play, and I would have been like, yup.
And chances are nobody's going to check, and if they do, there's an even greater chance they're not going to bother to tell us.
That's true. That's true. People like to let us live in our own little world.
So, in this particular case, it is, of course, the Henry V. And the line was where the Dauphin is entreating the King of France to go to war with the what was probably his signature line is that was it self-love is not so vile a sin as self-neglect.
Hmm. Okay.
So it you know, even in that context, there's certainly a recognition of pride as a sin to some degree, but you know, is this a deadly sin that's bordering on one of the sins?
Right, exactly. Are we back to that? Where it's like, yeah, you know, whatever, dude.
I mean, did pride just edge in? And I think that, like, you know, anything is okay in moderation. Perhaps that's the key here, is that pride is all right in moderation.
When checked, when yes. Ego checked, pride is an acceptable loss. It's decent collateral damage. It's not, you know, but it can go off the rails. It can go way off the rails as a sin,
and all too often does.
Right. So let's start the show. We've only been talking for about 5 minutes now, so it's time to start the show. Give me a good example.
I think a really prideful character.
Right.
Would have to be MODOK. I like to really go as far left field as I can right off the bat with this. Just, when your head is so colossal that your body and your limbs can't support it, and yet you still can command the respect, admiration, and fear of those who serve you.
Emphasis on the fear. Emphasis on the fear.
I think there's a lot of emphasis on the fear, but it's easy to blind yourself to the fact that it's a lot of fear,
right,
involved. So, you know, he's bound to be one of the more prideful characters out there because he's got to have a tremendous ego to go with that colossal, you know, mega macrocephalic head of his. I mean, Charlie Brown feels comfortable around MODOK. He actually feels like, you know, me and my friends don't have a problem.
I like where this is going. I like starting off with just right out of the gate with the biggest headed dude that you can possibly think of. Again, I will stress this. If the makers of the Marvel Universe 3¾-inch line are listening to this or happen upon it at some point, make a MODOK figure.
Absolutely. Do a deluxe. Do it as a part of a box set with somebody else.
Right. Do a Von Strucker, Fenris MODOK box set. Fenris.
That's the only way that's ever going to get made.
That's right. I have a hankering for blonde twins. All right.
You want your MODOK, you're buying Fenris.
Speaking of, while we're in this weird head, lots of pride train of thought, let's just go straight to Red Skull.
Oh, yes.
I mean, the man has more pride than anybody with a giant red head should ever command. You know, if you want to look upon your works, ye mighty, which, by the way, title of the episode, we never even got to that.
I kept meaning to throw that in there somewhere, but
we are the anti-Sisyphus. The boulder just rolled over us and kept going. We couldn't catch up to it to push it back up the hill. Red Skull, commander of supreme commander of Hydra, essentially. Definitely a lot of pride. Definitely will continue to go after Captain America. Definitely has a giant skull like red head that you should hide that thing. You should put that thing under wraps somewhere. You should have at least a little self-conscious.
I think though, you know, apart from the Captain America movie, for the most part, he does wear that blazing crimson noggin of his is sort of a badge of honor.
Oh, he does. Look what I've survived.
Yeah.
You know,
and you know, if you don't like it, I'll shoot you.
Right. I have a cosmic cube. And what do you got?
Oh, and how proud is he of that?
Oh my God. How wheels that thing out at every party? Like little Tommy that can whistle with his tongue curled. Oh, come here, show what you can do. Have you seen my cosmic cube?
And I get one struck over there. Hey, Red Skull, show everybody the cube. No, look.
Right, oh, come on, Red Skull. No, they has already seen the red cube. No. It was rolled it out. Use it, show it. I don't know why you haven't used it to fix my other eye. But,
Why Von Strucker became an 80s Russian villain?
I don't know, but I like it. I don't like him as much as Angelo, but I do like him.
Well, at least some pride, extent. We'll bring Angelo along later on.
You know who strikes me as having a lot of pride? Any villain of the Justice League. Any of them. Because you have to have an overarching supreme command of your own self-worth. If you're thinking, you know what? I could probably not only take it to Superman, probably could take Batman all by himself. Wonder Woman, that's no problem. Flash, yeah. Green Lantern, I know how to take him out, but I'll go after every one of them at the same time. Well, that's what I'm going to do. Like, well, that.
Think, you know, that actually brings to mind an example of one of the more perfect characters to explore in this, and that is Deathstroke the Terminator, one Slade Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about one bad eye.
Talk about, holy cow.
Still kicking it.
It's just rocking it out. Like, he's...
I mean, among other things, in addition, I mean, the man is like superhuman. He excels at every weapon under the sun. Could probably give Taskmaster a run for his money without the benefit of mutant powers. You know, you name it, he's done it. He's been there. He's killed him. he's made his fortune. He's done his big game hunting stand. He used to have a really hot babe for a wife. Both of his kids are dead. I don't know what that has to do with anything, but
it doesn't, but you know, it's important to the narrative.
But the most important thing of all is he somehow got a British war hero to become little more than his Alfred.
That's true.
Poor Wintergreen. I mean, the guy, yeah, he's got an Alfred-y name, but good Lord, the man went to war.
But you know what? So did Alfred.
That's
so
true.
That being said, I'm sure that they have they retire to some kind of legion hall somewhere, you know, and just trade stories. Here's my thing about Pride and Deathstroke. You know, Deathstroke has that ability to see, what is it, 5 seconds into the future?
Something like that, or he's shrewd enough to second guess everything.
Well, he's got that going for him. Plus, if you've read Identity Crisis, which we've told you to read 1,000 times on this show, and we'll continue to do so, we're going to revisit that title here in a little bit when it comes to Pride, but. The man has like a 5 second precog. He's a brilliant tactician besides, master of all arms. So he has a lot to be prideful about. And here's the thing that really shows how much pride he has in himself. When he hangs out at his house or mansion, he wears the big game hunter safari outfit, just hanging out. That shows you how much pride that man has in himself. Just going to wear the pith helmet and the khaki jumper.
And he wears
jumper.
A white eye patch to buck tradition.
That's his.
A black eye patch, somehow you're just – it's so common you don't even notice it.
Right.
But the white eye patch is like, come on, I dare you to notice that I'm missing an eye.
Right. Just look upon it. Look upon what I can do with one eye.
And not only that, but he wears a mask that accentuates the fact that he's only got one good eye.
He wears the half daredevil.
I mean, the only person more obvious in and out of costume is Oliver Queen. Especially back in the days when he was, you know, the richest owner of a florist shop. The man owned a shop called Sherwood Florist and sported the same beard configuration as Green Arrow. That domino mask and little foppish hat ain't fooling anybody, mister.
Right. This wasn't Longbow Hunter Green Arrow with the big hood. This was I have a feather in my cap Green Arrow. Which, Batman had a cowl, right? So Batman wasn't too concerned. How much time do you think Green Arrow spent, speaking of pride, how much time do you think Green Arrow spent chasing that little hat around? You know, like the wind gust hits it. He's drawing a bead on Deathstroke, or he's drawing a bead on one of his various nefarious arch nemeses, and he's got a giant boxing glove arrow, and he's hanging off the side of a building ready to shoot it, and all of a sudden the little wind gust picks up, blows his hat off. Son of a bitch! He's gonna go chase that thing down again.
Well, he's probably got a hat retrieval arrow.
It's free!
But the thing about it is, what I want to talk about pride with Green Arrow is that he probably spends as much time, the same amount of time that he spends practicing his archery. And I reckon he probably practices archery 3 or 4 hours a day. Probably. Because he is the idle rich, after all.
Correct, true.
And, you know, you do, even the best, practice every day.
You have to, yeah.
Yeah, you want to keep everything going. And plus, he's got to try out the new arrows, like the new hat retrieval arrow.
Right!
So, in addition to that, he spends at least an hour a day on his beard.
You think he spends a solid hour on his beard?
I think there's an hour a day. I think Black Canary is like drumming her fingers on the Justice League meeting table, waiting for him to come out of the bathroom. You know, she goes in real quick, teases her hair, throws on a little makeup, and she's like, okay, anytime, Ollie. He's in there, you know, with his little grooming tool arrow.
His electric razor arrow.
You know, it just, it goes on and on. The man's beard is immaculate. It's sort of the understated version of those mega beard contest people.
I've seriously thought about growing mine out into the Errol Flynn. The man definitely has an Errol Flynn complex. Regardless, but I've seriously thought about growing mine out into an Errol Flynnish style.
You can practically see Oliver Queen at the Chinese theater. How did he do such incredible stunts with such tiny feet?
So
well, that was Hedy Lamarr.
It doesn't matter.
That's Hedley.
Doesn't matter. Another one that falls into the Deathstroke category for me is Taskmaster.
Oh yes.
When you have photographic reflexes, you not only can you watch somebody do a whatever move they're doing and then replicate that move with 100% accuracy, you can also replicate the pride they had in doing that move at 100% accuracy. So if you see Captain America like on a pommel horse, like Jim Taka or whatever that movie was.
Jim Cotta.
Jim Cotta, thank you.
Jim Taka was from Taco Bell.
Oh, yes.
Fourth wheel.
Then imagine your Taskmaster can do that immediately and just be like, sit on it, Potsy. It's got to be rough. So why don't we just go straight to where we want to go anyway at this point and just talk about Watchmen.
Is that where this is headed?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort
it
of the
be.
This is the it's the I know you take great pride in your knowledge of Watchmen. So let's just throw it out there right away. How does pride fold into, cuz we've said in every issue now of the story arc that in some way, shape, or form, we believe that Alan Moore has folded all of the seven deadly sins into the characters of Watchmen.
That's because right. That's even what if he Alan didn't Moore intend does. To. Now he intended to.
Right. We're allowing him. We aren't even going to take. We'll take our own personal pride in him taking credit for that.
That's right. We will otherwise pocket our pride.
Alan Moore is one of those people that's so insanely insane and intelligent that when he writes a character, he writes the human condition so brilliantly that he can't help but to fold that into his characters. So,
well, that's a good point. You know, I think even if there wasn't a conscious effort to do so, it's just going to happen in and of itself.
Right.
Because, so, you know, there is his characters, his writing is so human and so well thought through.
Right.
That if nothing else, it lends itself beautifully to this line of questioning.
So how does pride fold into the Watchmen in your humble and esteemed opinion?
Well, again, I'd like to try to dodge the obvious initially.
Okay.
And take a look at a character that, you know, you might not be expecting right out of the gate. And that's Captain Metropolis of the Minutemen.
Okay.
Captain Metropolis is a character whose indomitable pride led him to try to revive, you know, capture, to savor his youth in okay. his old age. And he really, you know, he's trying to create the Crime Busters. And he somehow manages to sell the idea to every hero left in town.
Right.
Including Rorschach pre-crazy. When Rorschach was just enough, you know, it was enough to fight crime.
Right. He didn't need to be Rorschach. We talked about that last.
Exactly.
Last issue, where it's the difference between, you know, the character, the person becoming Rorschach and Rorschach becoming the person. It's that Batman alter ego thing.
Exactly.
When it was good enough that he could put on the mask and just fight crime.
And I think that what is suggested in the Crime Busters scene, and it's one of those things where it is easy to lose that in the context of, it's just this little aside where the whole idea of teaming, you know, having a superhero team again falls apart. And it's probably just as well in the end because, you know, the Keen Act is looming large in the future and Dr. Manhattan is smugly sitting over there knowing all this and saying nothing. And
yeah, right.
You know, ultimately, it comes down to the fact that it's, was it Nelson Gardner, I think was his name, is just so prideful that he can't let that past go. It can't just simply die away. And he's going to do his dead level best to revive the Minutemen in some form. And he looks at himself almost as the catalyst for change and for, you know, he's the one who's recognized exactly what's wrong in America and exactly what it needs. And what it needs is us.
Right.
The superheroes, the people who are crazy or committed or whatever enough to put on the costume and go beat people up. And ultimately, you know, it is a tremendous exercise in pride if you really, like I do, overanalyze that scene.
Well,
especially at the end, because he is so crestfallen when it all begins to fall apart, courtesy of the comedian, in which case you're wondering, what was he thinking? Did he just need to round out that? Was he just so stuck on the number of people in the group that, you know, he managed
to. He had to include. Right.
That he used to work with this guy. I'm sorry, it should come as no surprise what's going to happen when you throw him in the mix.
The thing is, the worst kind of pride is the most sinful pride, as far as I'm concerned, is in the world of sequential art, is vicarious pride. You can take pride in your country. You can take pride in what you're capable of. You can take pride in what you've done. You can take a quiet pride, or you can take a more Booster Goldian. Booster Goldian. There was a period of time where the Justice League were all just prideful assholes. I'm Guy Gardnerian pride in what you've done. But when you start taking a vicarious pride, for instance, Captain Manhattan, or we discussed the original Silk Spectre.
Yes.
Last issue. Taking a certain sense of envious, vicarious pride through her daughter.
That's a good point, because that really does answer that initial question. When does pride become a sin?
Right.
When do you go from, like, you know, being proud of your daughter at the dance recital and being sinfully prideful?
Exactly. The vicarious pride is difficult for me. That one is rough, and I think that's where you see the characters like that come out full force. I also think that there is Dr. Manhattan is a very interesting case, because I think that in the bell curve of pride, you know, where pride is at the apex of that bell curve, a sinful pride is at the apex of that bell curve. He has so far surpassed that and down the other side and then out into the ether that you'll never find him, because there's something to be said for knowing everything that has come before and after, that you stop taking pride in it and you're just sort of like the Watcher or the Celestials or some cosmic being that you can't take. You know, there's a reason that the Watcher was an outcast. There's a reason that they kept coming to the Watcher and saying, listen, Jack, you need to stop this shit. It's because he took pride in Earth, right? He took pride in the human race. And this is off the Watchmen, and we'll bring it back around to the Watchmen, but remind me to go back to that. Because,
Watcher is a very good example of pride that is an unexpected example as well.
Exactly. But so who else? You talked about how Night Owl, in his own ways, has encapsulated all of these sins in one way or another. How does he work with pride?
I think there is early in his career, and you see the artifacts of his pride down in his workshop.
Right.
Is that he is going to be... He's going to pay tribute to his mentor, to his inspiration, but at once he's going to be the best Night Owl ever. You know, he's going to Night Owl this thing to the nines, to the point of just the ridiculous, to the point that after he's retired and is confronted literally with his works, he has to come to the inescapable conclusion, this is stupid. You don't need air-to-air missiles to stop a jewel thief.
Exactly.
His mentor had it right. You just go out there on the street level and you clobber the bad guy.
Well, and this is the thing. This is the other thing about pride that always and identifiable pride that always cracks me up, right? You always got this scene, and you had it with Night Owl, and then you have it with Batman sometimes, and you have it with any superhero that has a lair, right? Anybody that has a lair will inevitably retire, and then, you know, you don't hear from them for a while. And then all of a sudden they decide they need to come out of retirement. Lair is still totally intact. Nothing changed.
Yeah, exactly. It's either that or you get that kind of, you know, the Night Owl thing with the dust collecting and everything. And it just becomes sort of Rufus T. Firefly. I was just thinking of all those years I wasted collecting stamps.
Right. Exactly. Like, do you go down there sometimes and just literally look upon that which you've created? Is that what you're doing? Like, sometimes I like to go look at my weird snow night owl costume. Or
and, like, yeah, though I used it twice. And once it wasn't even snowing. I just, you know, I was like, damn it, I've got the thing. I'm wearing it.
But like Batman. The dude has a giant penny and a T-Rex in a cave. How much more prideful do you need to be? Well, like, I took this.
Not only that, is he's got all this crap down in the garage or down in the cave.
Right.
And Alfred's got to go down there with a giant bucket full of, like, polish.
Right.
And, you know, Tarnax.
They don't make that Swiffer. They do not make that Swiffer. Wayne Enterprises had to make a special Swiffer for Alex to clean for Alfred to clean the Batcave with.
And then on top of all this, he's finagled some snaggletooth hunchback.
Some prideless freak just threw money at him. Hey, hey, let's come down to my
why don't you live down in a damn cave for the rest of your life and stay out of sight.
Why don't you come down to Uncle Touchy's puzzle basement and make some ham radio so I can look at you and laugh?
Talk about looking upon my works.
That's right. You're mine now. You go down here. You live here now. So what else do you have to say?
I own you.
I own you. What else do you have to say?
Taco Bell.
What? Snaggletooth. Daddy wants a fourth meal. What? Wow.
Dude. Now let's get Green Arrow to use his taco arrow for you.
It's right. His mild sauce arrow. What else you got to say about Watchmen? Is there, do you have any?
I think, you know, I was just skirting the whole Ozymandias.
Yeah, you got to come to that, thing. Though. I mean,
that's just a gimme. But the thing about it is, if you're like me and you think about this stuff too much, what you see in the crime buster scene is Nelson Gardner, it is Captain Metropolis, in a way is the catalyst. He's that last little element. There was always something going on for Vite. There was this question of how can I take everything I am and put it to the best possible use? Beyond just going and slugging Moloch every now and again.
Right.
There has to be more. To the point where he's just like, you know, screw this, I'm leaving.
Right.
But that more, and it was literally also part of why he left, because it was a necessity. He was wise enough, shrewd enough, informed enough to make the connection, to connect the dots and realize where the world was headed. And the best way to do what he felt he needed to do to save humanity was to do it as quietly as possible and literally, you know, bowed out of the dance while the music was still playing.
Yeah.
And that allowed him to position himself to do the most prideful thing I think of any prideful character in comics. And that is destroy to teach, to save, and, you know, in the end where he describes making himself feel all, carry the burden of all the death that he bears full responsibility for.
Right.
But at the end, is that enough? To carry that weight? Did the end really justify the means, or did we just delay the inevitable a little further?
And we've talked about this in previous issues. Do you feel you can fault him for that? Do you feel that is a level of pride that is irredeemable?
I think in this case, yes.
Okay, so this is the one of the sins that you feel because we didn't.
This is definitely one where pride carried itself to the point of sin because ultimately his pride led to tremendous destruction, death and destruction on an epic scale.
Okay.
That was solely out of his own hubris, you know, his need to be the savior of humanity.
Right. But the thing is, humanity wouldn't have saved itself. We know that.
No, it's true.
Somebody had to save humanity.
The smartest man on the sender.
Exactly. Which is its own version of pride. To want to continue to be the smartest man on Earth, and in order to continue to be the smartest man on Earth, a couple million people had to die, but he still gets to be the smartest man on Earth. Instead of being the last man on Earth.
And feign sort of self-deprecation by not claiming that he, you know, putting it all on the PR people.
Right. Just him in Manhattan. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants just you in Manhattan hanging out for eternity. God, that would be awful.
Especially Dr. Manhattan.
Right. All 30 of them that he makes. Playing a whole euchre tournament by himself.
Can we deal you in? No, I don't want to be dealt in. That's okay. I'll deal myself. There we are.
That's pop. There's another one. All right, we got a full tournament now.
Right. We're gonna do a little mixed doubles today.
So, okay.
You want to know who's gonna win?
That was a good. You've done it again. You've managed to fold Watchmen into another sin appropriately.
I'm proud of that.
And you should be proud of that. As we come into the last quarter of the show, which we're at again.
How do we do that?
I don't even know. I do want to talk about this, okay? I do want to talk about what the fact that pride does generally come before the fall, and that hubris is a real and lasting thing in comic books. What Huberian what's your favorite Huberian story or concept or character in comics?
Only on the Huberian.
I don't think that's Hyborian.
That's not real, okay.
It kind of is, but not really. You know, you've got guys like Doom and Octopus, and I don't think Magneto falls into that category. I think that he carries himself with a little bit of hubris, but I think that he's a different kind. I don't think he's a different – when you say mutant pride, I don't think you mean it the way that we think you mean it. You know,
exactly.
I think it's different. But definitely you got guys like Doom. You got guys like Dr. Octopus. You got guys like – we talked about Red Skull out there that – the Mandarin that have these grand, huge schemes that the only downfall to these schemes is their own hubris, their own pride.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the Riddler is a good example of that.
Oh,
to
yes.
Go back to a character we visited often.
But that's a good,
because
good one.
His pride comes before every one of his falls.
It's true.
And he's too proud to admit it. And he goes back and makes the same mistake over and over.
That's valid. That's very true. It's very true.
And a great conceptual example of pride coming before the fall is pretty much the entire storyline in Arkham Asylum Living Hell.
Okay.
Which, you know, I can't ever stop recommending. And you have this character who is a white-collar criminal whose indomitable pride destroys everyone. As, you know, as his crimes come back to visit him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, ultimately he just is able to deflect and make himself blameless as much as possible until the point that he's having to face the music. And to try to avoid that, he gets his trial held in Gotham City so that he can plead insanity.
And end up in the asylum.
Yeah, unfortunately, what that meant is he winds up in Arkham Asylum.
Which nobody wants.
Which is the fall, essentially.
Yes.
And his fall is every bit as striking and powerful and painful as all of the pain that he inflicted on others.
Right.
And so you take a character who you have zero sympathy for and... He gets his comeuppance, as it were, and you're very happy about it. You as an audience, as a reader, you're enjoying the fall. because it's a very deserved fall.
Right.
To the point where, you know, he becomes exactly the sort of thing that he's been thrown in the midst of.
He was forced to look into the abyss for too long.
Yeah, and became a part of it, became a tenant of the abyss. And ultimately, at the end of it all, he remains no less prideful.
It's different pride.
He just becomes the physical embodiment of the black soul that he already possessed.
Right. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a goodie.
And for me, he becomes the great white shark.
Right, which needs more play in the comics. I don't know if the great white shark's been prevalent in the New 52 or not, but if it hasn't been, and the guys that are listening that want to make us a MODOK figure can talk to the guys over at DC, get that done for us, will ya? For me, probably the biggest story of hubris, and I know that there's a lot of argument here, right? I could quote, I could cite and reference probably 100 different times the Avengers have broke up over hubris, or times the X-Men have stood over hubris, you know. But for me, and I mentioned it earlier, and I'm going to reference it now, I'm going to come back to it, was Identity Crisis. And the reason that this is a story of just a huge fall as a result of hubris or entirely too much pride was the whole, well, we've got Dr. Light in our infinite wisdom, because there could never be anything that could go wrong with this plan. we're gonna wipe his memory using backwards Zatanna magic, and everything will be fine. He'll never find out. And not only are we going to do it to him, but we're also going to make sure that Batman doesn't know either. So everything will be great, because Batman hasn't figured everything out ever that we've ever done ever. So everything will be fine. And then it comes around to bite them in the ass, literally and figuratively. It's a huge story of a group of superhuman people, because it has to be very easy to fall into a pride cycle or a hubris cycle when you are superhuman, when you have a ring controlled by will that is the most powerful weapon in the universe, when you can run faster than anyone, period. You know,
yeah,
when you,
it should be the Pride League of America.
Yeah. When you're Superman, for God's sakes, when you have the ability to make anything happen by saying it backwards, anything you want to have happen, when you're the Martian Manhunter, when you're, you know, any of these characters, any superhero, when you're Spider-Man, when you're Superman, when you're Batman, when you're, you know, when you're Booster Gold, when you're any superhero that you can think of, there has to be a razor's edge walk in order to keep that in check.
Well said, yes.
Yeah, so that is my favorite story of falling off the pride wagon and going straight into hubris and not thinking.
It certainly illustrates that level at which you hit the sin barrier, as it were.
Definitely. Because, like, these are characters that you revere, right? I mean, this is the Justice League as a reader. How long did you spend holding these characters in the highest level of esteem? And all of a sudden you're confronted with this storyline that the reason that the Dr. Light, whom should be, by all intents and purposes, this, you know, Green Lantern level villain, has always been, you know, displayed as this kind of Lenny Ice and Men type character. You're all of a sudden you're confronted with the reasons, and you experience that fall as well as they do. You just experience it before they do, and that for me was just pretty crushing. You know, like you read that, and it's kind of a physical blow when you read that.
Absolutely. And it's sort of a, you know, the loss of innocence.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm trying to think of a good breakup, super team breakup story that involved hubris. And I don't know if I can really pinpoint one, which is weird.
The thing is, it's one of those things, you know, they're out there. And there have to be a lot of them. But when you're confronted with the necessity of, you know, conjuring them up, it's kind of like going to the video store and you can't think of 100 movies you wanted to see before you got there.
The whole Civil War story arc was pretty hubery by its own nature. You know, that whole registration, we need to register the heroes. Spider-Man coming out as Peter Parker because Iron Man was like, yeah, come on, look at all this armor. I got suits armor everywhere. It's okay. Everybody knows I'm Tony Stark. Like, everybody know that you're Spider-Man. It's not like you have anybody to protect or love or care for, so go for it. It's fine. Celebrate yourself.
And I think the whole thing with the retooling of OMAC as a Batman's private artificial army to...
Right.
I think there's a tremendous amount of, like, Lex Luthorian hubris there.
Well, that's Batman's fall. If Batman has, for instance, not to get direct, and Batman has a lot of these Huberian moments. the one you just quoted, the OMAC, the Tower of Babylon, same type of story. I think they kind of mimic each other, where, you know, Batman, because nobody is smarter than Batman, Batman's going to come up with a way to take out every superhuman. In the DC universe and store them on a USB stick drive and carrying it around with him. That's going to cause some problems. The one that always gets me for Batman is Nightfall. Batman finds Bane and says, I can take him.
Yeah.
Sure, he's like 8 foot tall and pumped full of steroids and is a crazy, you know, rage monster. I can take him. What happened, Batman? You got your back broken. That's what happened.
Yeah, why not?
I'll take this kid to the desert. It'll be fine. It's like the one line. Batman's whole life is that one line from Die Hard. Come to New York, they say. It'll be fun. It's all that over and over again. Take your sidekick to the desert. Fight the Ra's al Ghul's out there. It'll be fine. Everything will be fine. You know?
What the old classic, what could possibly go wrong?
Right. That's really the subtitle of this episode, this issue, is what could possibly go wrong? Everything. All the time. Hey, Nick Fury, speaking of one-eyed pride, I think that there's a lot of one-eyed pride.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you can get by with just the one, and next thing you know, you got it all figured out.
Right. I think Nick Fury has a lot of pride. I think that he carries himself with a certain amount of hubris, flying around in a jet. Like who has enough pride or enough, you know, non-self-effacement that every 30 days their giant flying battleship gets knocked out of the sky with something and that they just keep putting it back up there. Just keep putting it back up there. So
that's what you do.
That's what you do. All right. So we're going to wrap her up. We've done a good job. I think we've done a solid job. Do you have any, final thoughts on this bad boy?
I do indeed. I think I want to acknowledge just how, you know, something kind of got glossed over a little bit there, and that is the whole Watcher thing. I don't want that to disappear in the midst of all this, because that was something that I thought was really very clever, that, you know, you hadn't occurred to me, is that there is a sort of like pride in this world that he's watching. to the point that, you know, he's going to do whatever it takes to protect it, even if it means disavowing his own purpose.
Right. And there's this theme, and, you know, DC has it and Marvel has it, where Earth is this kind of center, this fulcrum, this apex of, well, why does everything happen on Earth? Is, you know, the question's been posed so many times. You know, why do the Kree come here? Why did the Skrull come here? Why does, you know, why does Darkseid keep trying to take Earth? Why does Starro keep rearing his ugly starfish head around here? and there's this idea that I think in DC it's the apex, the center, the alignment of all the 52 worlds. I think in Marvel it's the, like, some kind of weird center of some galactic spaceway, and that's why all this stuff happens. But there's this general sense all the time that, and the Watcher thing really reminded me of it, that yeah, we're Earth, and we're human beings, and we take, and there's nothing that we can't do. There's no fight we can't win. You know, the whole race in comic books has this overarching sense of pride and hubris that gets them in trouble constantly.
Absolutely. I think, you know, it becomes like Earth as the center of the universe in this very, you know, how did we get to be the crossroads of everything?
Right. And yet we've survived it all. Whenever Galactus shows up, we manage to, you know, do something to keep him out, keep him from eating Earth. Whenever Darkseid shows up, we manage to fight him off. Whenever, you know, the Annihilus wave comes, we just send a Nova and some Kree up there. They'll handle it. Like, eventually, it gets to the point where something there's yet to be a real fall for Earth. But that, you know, I want that comic book to be written. I want Earth's fall because of its pride. That's the one I want to see. On either side of the fence, Marvel or DC get to work.
And I guess the only other thing I can think of where really pride got sinfully out of hand would, in a sense, at least the potential was there in something that may or may not have had happened.
Okay.
Which is the semi-future imperfect, whatever one would call it, but is Hulk future imperfect.
Okay. Now, I'm not completely familiar. I haven't read that. I know the – what did they call the Hulk in it? I forget what they call it.
Maestro.
Maestro? Okay. But I haven't really read it, so enlighten me.
Essentially, as I recall, Hulk just sort of took it upon himself to take over the whole world and destroy all the heroes and villains.
Okay.
And I think it was a matter of him just becoming more and more powerful to the point where it just – you know, he ceased to be the Hulk and just became the embodiment of this rage, and sort of set himself up as the king of the world.
Okay.
And then I think they wind up pulling kind of a Days of Future Past on him.
All right. All right.
And, you know, get present Hulk to stop future Hulk from ever happening.
Yeah. I mean, here's what I want to say to end this thing, right?
All right.
Is you've got a let's talk a little bit about the pride that exists in Kang. Because the thing about Kang is he's so prideful that there's three versions of him floating around trying to stop the other versions of himself from doing whatever the current version is doing. That takes a whole hell of a lot of pride
that
and hubris.
It does.
To have Immortus running around trying to stop Kang from doing something that, and
well,
what was the other one?
He's trying to stop Kang's plot to destroy Rama Tut's.
Rara, thank you.
While Rama Tut is busily trying to destroy Immortus.
That's right.
And it's just this time anomaly daisy chain effect going on.
All right. I think that's a good place. I think Time Anomaly Daisy Chain is the place at which we get.
Yes, we'd better end now.
So this is a good show. This is where it was at. What's our next issue about?
We are going to conclude, and I'm going to miss this one. We're going to conclude the Seven Deadlies.
Yeah.
With the final two that we haven't touched, probably the most challenging of all, in a story we can only call A Big Meal and Then a Nap, which is, of course, Gluttony and Sloth.
All right.
And both are things that, for the most part, comics are not chock full of.
They aren't. So this is going to be interesting. I hope that everybody had a good Thanksgiving. We're recording this at the end of a Thanksgiving weekend. I think maybe we should have switched the Gluttony and Sloth to this.
Exactly.
Issue.
Would have been better time, just to be sure.
But I look forward to the next one. It's going to be a challenge. This one was a little more challenging because of the fact that we cover Pride so regularly. We wanted to take it outside of the box that we usually keep it in. So I think we did it justice. I think we could take a lot of pride in what we've done here today. Cole, why don't you plug us up with all of the show notes?
All right. Well, we can, of course, we are coming to you from the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com, which is the home of far too many podcasts and features to be mentioned.
Look upon his works, ye mighty.
Yes, indeed. Check all that out. We've got some amazingly talented people doing some amazingly cool stuff all the time there. And then, in addition, we also have our sister site, the Convention Awareness Project Texas, where a brand new show was recently added. When this airs, will only be a couple of days away. Wrapping up the 2013, the 2014 listings should be up by about the time this goes up.
What show's coming? I want to know. I can't be there for it, so I want to hear
either,
what...
unfortunately, because it's right before other commitments I have, and that is the Austin's Toy Show, I believe it's called, in Austin, Texas. There is also another show in San Antonio.
Jeez.
And one other show the same weekend. And then I think there are actually two shows right before Christmas, and then I think we're pretty much wrapped for the year. And I found out today about yet another show in January 2014. So
nice.
There's no shortage of conventions in Texas.
The train keeps rolling all night long.
Well, I am all for that. And of course, you can occasionally find myself, Andrew, Catherine, and Rick over at the United States of Geekdom at unitedstatesofgeekdom.com. And be sure and check out our forums. And if you ever feel compelled to email us, please write to us at our new writing to address, jcumail@yahoo.com.
A writing to address.
Writing to address.
Last week, here's the thing. Like, we were doing so well, Cole. Last week we had hashtags. Everything was on the upswing.
I was really getting into the whole modern internet experience there.
And now we fall to what writing to address.
Writing to address. Thank you.
Oh, God. This has been fun.
I'm channeling grandmas everywhere.
You are. It is that time. How do you fix the box that tells me the pictures look like? join us next week when we discuss
Your funny book show.
Sloth and Gluttony. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.